Today I want to talk to you a bit about applying spectroscopic techniques, particularly X-ray absorption, fine structure spectroscopy, to speciate nutrients in heterogeneous systems and waste materials. I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Jen Sider, a current doctoral student, and she'll be talking a little bit later, and former PhD students, Derek Peake, who's in the University of Saskatchewan, Afel Zinga, who will soon be at Rutgers, Yuji Arai at Clemson, and Stefan Hunger, who's at the University of Leeds in the UK. As most of us know, there are a number of ex situ techniques that one can use to look at nutrients, for example, metals in systems. I've listed these here. The old drift infrared technique, X-ray photon electron spectroscopy, some use of transmission electron microscopy, XRD, and thermal analysis. But one of the problems with these, as we know, is that one often has to put the sample under high vacuum or dry the material, and so this can create artifacts in what one might see in terms of results. I want to talk today about particularly the use of some of the in situ techniques, such as NMR, attenuated total reflectance, FTIR, and particularly the application of XAFs, particularly looking at the Zanes analysis of data. Most of you are very familiar with X-ray absorption spectroscopy, so I don't want to spend a great deal of time on this, but there are two major regions of the spectra, the lower energy portion of the spectrum, the X-ray absorption near-edge structure, in which one can particularly get important information on oxidation states, and then at the higher energies we can get the extended portion. And here one can get very important structural information, such as coordination number, bond distances, next nearest neighbors, etc. I'll show you first some data that we've collected looking at phosphate absorption at mineral surfaces. These are data that were taken out of a paper that we published earlier this year, Afel Zinga's work, looking at the absorption of phosphate onto hematite. These are absorption edges. And we're looking here at different pHs, and what one sees is that there are various IR frequencies. Kirk, I'm trying to get, sorry, go back. Now I'm going forward. You can see that there are various bands that are occurring at these different pHs. At the higher pH, we're primarily seeing three bands, and as one increases or decreases pH, we see that the band is shifting to a higher wave number. And what this reflects is that we're getting different speciation as a function of pH, and one sees that the absorption is increasing with lower pH. And at the higher pH, we primarily see one type of surface complex, which is a monodentate, mononuclear complex, and then as the pH decreases, we're seeing two major types of complexes that are monoprotonated, both a monodentate mononuclear and a monodentate binuclear complex. So this is not surprising, and as one models absorption on surfaces, we have to understand that as one changes environmental factors, we can have a change in speciation. These are the same sorts of data looking at different spectra where we looked at the effect of concentration. This is going from 5 micromolar to 50. And we see very similar behavior that as we increase the concentration, we get more absorption. We have a mixture of two surface complexes, and as one at the lower pH and as concentration increases, we see predominantly, again, these two major monodentate, mononuclear, binuclear complexes. Now I want to turn attention to looking at some messier systems, and we've been doing quite a bit of work over the last few years looking at phosphorus speciation, particularly in waste materials. Most of us know that the major inputs of phosphorus come either from inorganic sources or organic sources, and with large loadings of phosphate in aqueous systems, obviously we can get into problems with eutrophication and even the appearance of certain microbes that can be deleterious to human health. In the Mid-Atlantic region of the U.S., we have very large poultry industry. You can see the magnitude of the waste material that is produced. We have very sandy soils and high water tables, and so there's great concern about the transport of phosphorus into water, both surface and even leaching, because the soils are quite sandy. And in many cases, the soils are actually saturated with phosphorus because the inputs much exceed the outputs. We have a great surplus of phosphorus. Well over 90% of the soils are rated high. And you can see the soil test levels were much above the optimum value. So there's great concern about phosphorus. And I want to review some of the data that we collected. These are data that Derek P. collected, where we actually took samples from some of Tom Sims' studies that were where they had taken poultry litter from the houses, some of which were not treated with alum. The whole idea is that alum is added to particularly reduce the amount of soluble phosphorus and also to help sequester ammonia. And you can see that the levels of phosphorus are extremely high. If we look at the water-soluble or the aluminum-amended houses, we see that the amount of water-soluble is significantly reduced. But the question is, what is the speciation of phosphorus in these two particular systems? So these are studies where we just did Zane's analysis, and these are samples that are basically controlled where alum was not added. And if you look at the bottom set of spectra there and compare that to some of the known materials, it's really quite difficult with this fingerprinting technique to delineate what the major species are. Certainly we're not forming hydroxyl apatite in these systems. You can see the spectra resemble closely both dicalcium phosphate. There's a shoulder off of the absorption edge for the untreated materials. One could also say it looks somewhat like aqueous phosphate and also phytic acid. And poultry are not able to digest phytic acid because they lack the phytase enzyme, and so this is why phosphorus is added to the material, and this, of course, exacerbates the problem. If one looks at the alum amended samples, again, these are labeled 191, 182, and 117, we're not seeing aluminum phosphate, obviously. It's not forming. But it looks, again, much like phytic acid or phosphate adsorption onto amorphous aluminum hydroxide. So clearly, just looking at the PK edge data, it seems somewhat consistent for the control samples with dicalcium phosphate and perhaps phosphorus adsorption on aluminum hydroxide in the amended samples. But the spectra have very subtle differences, and so it's difficult to really be definitive about what the speciation is. And so we used both the calcium K-edge and sulfur K-edge to try to better delineate what the speciation was in the two systems. These are the calcium K-edge data, and as you would expect in the non-amended material, that we would see more the presence of the dicalcium phosphate. And again, if one looks at the spectra, they look somewhat similar. The alum amended materials, you see similarity to calcium sulfate, which is consistent. In terms of the sulfur K edge, as you would expect in the alum amended, because we added aluminum sulfate, we see a similarity to the spectra with calcium sulfate. So one might ask, well, in the in organic free systems, we would expect, in terms of thermodynamics, that one would go from dicalcium phosphate to hydroxyl apatite. So why aren't we seeing this in these systems? I think the main reason is that we have a lot of organic phosphorus, a lot of things like phytic acid that could be sorbing onto the surface of the dicalcium phosphate and basically just preventing the transition to the more thermodynamically stable hydroxyl apatite. In terms of the alum amendment, if you recall back from the data I showed you on the control and the alum amended samples, the pH initially does decrease, but then it goes up above, in some cases, above neutral. And so we may well be forming aluminum phosphate initially at the lower pHs. But over time, we could be getting dissolution, The kinetics of aluminum hydroxide should maybe perhaps are greater than aluminum phosphate, and this is why we see more of the absorption of phosphate onto aluminum hydroxide rather than the formation of aluminum phosphate. To sort of complement the Zane studies, this is work that Stefan Hunger did where he used single pulse proton decoupled magic angle spinning NMR. And I'm showing you data here for the two unamended samples and basically calculating the chemical shifts in the relative peak area. And we see that in the unamended materials, we have predominantly, at least what we can quantitate, more presence of soluble phosphorus plus the calcium, dicalcium phosphate. But you see that there's a large portion that's unaccounted for, which is probably the presence of a lot of organic phosphorus that's quite difficult to delineate. In the alum-amended samples, the NMR would suggest that, again, we have some water-soluble phosphate, we have some dicalcium phosphate, and we clearly see the presence of phosphate adsorption onto aluminum hydroxide, but again, a significant portion of the total P is not accounted for. And so clearly this presence of organic phosphorus is a very important part of the total phosphorus speciation in material like poultry litter. And so we have been trying to better delineate what these organic forms are. And again, I just show you, this is work of Jennifer Sider that will soon appear in JQ. And we looked at a number of known organic phosphorus materials as well as inorganics. And you can see that the just looking at the fingerprinting, it's very difficult to delineate the speciation. And so what we've been doing is to apply principal component analysis and target transformation and then linear least squares fitting to perhaps better quantitate the phosphorus speciation, particularly the presence of organic materials. So I'll show you one slide. These are data where we looked at sequential extractions. And then after each extraction, we did the speciation using Zanes and, of course, ran a large number of known materials and then tried to quantitate the phosphorus. And what's interesting is that no one extraction really removes all of the phosphorus that one would expect. For example, the water-soluble, the ammonium carbonate would remove the labile, sodium hydroxide should remove the iron, aluminum, and organic P, and HCl should remove the calcium phosphates. So what one sees is, and this may be a little difficult to see, but in the alum amended materials, we see the presence of a lot of weak organic phosphorus phases, and we see a lot of aluminum phosphate. So the aluminum is obviously complexing quite strongly with a number of these organic phases, such as phytic acid, and we know that phytic acid is a siderophore, and so it has great affinity for things like aluminum. In the control litter material, we see a lot of organic phosphorus and also a lot of calcium phosphates. So this is not necessarily the panacea for helping us to delineate specifically what the organic phosphorus phases are. But I think this is obviously a very important part of these heterogeneous materials. The organic P phases are quite critical. And as we advance in using some of the soft X-ray spectroscopy and we get a little bit better at quantitating things, I think we'll have a much better idea of actually what all the species are. So with that, I'll close and be happy to answer any questions.
We have time for a couple questions.
I was wondering if one could approach these questions by applying scanning transmission X-ray microscopy and NET to get a better insight into binding mechanisms and so forth, and to cover both P and
right. Yeah, I think some of the Stixon techniques and the carbon XFs would be a very good way to go to look at some of these materials, because the organics are obviously very important in carbon and nitrogen and sulfur and so forth.
How do you differentiate between the aluminum phosphate and the iron phosphate?
The sodium hydroxide extractant really is supposed to extract both of those, so we're not really delineating necessarily between, but we did, you can see looking at the key on the right that we were able to not really delineate between the aluminum and iron, but aluminum phosphate and calcium phosphate we could delineate quite well.